something that they wouldn't tender because our term also is ending very soon, and therefore we should finalize everything that is concerning our rules. I'm sure that we give ourselves enough time by the end of the year. I think we should be sure. I don't think there's another rule that is referred to us now except this one, section 89. And then if there are other some part of the rule that are referred to us, then it's another issue. But section 29 is section 89, that's the one that we're supposed to look at today. Hopefully the legal team is going to assist us to give us the input. And then have a discussion on the ANC proposal. Hopefully other parties also will have that proposal, and then we can then deal with this matter and try to finalize it. If we don't, of course, if we agree, very good for the Rules Committee, because we won't have a long discussion. If we don't agree, I think we'll present the option to the Rules Committee to consider and take a decision. And let us start and the morning colleagues. I don't think it's going to be a long meeting, actually speaking. Advocate, what do you want us to take from you?
Chairperson, thank you very much. My apologies for being a little bit late. I always have busy mornings. I brought my kids to school. So my apologies for not getting here at 9 o'clock. So I'm going to try and keep it with your permission or direction, just to focus on the rules. Because the opinion written by senior counsel goes into constitutional interpretation and the background and the court case, which I find very useful, but I think we've dealt with that in previous meetings. So from page 70 onwards, Kerisha Pillay, who's from the Cape Bar and Gilbert Marcus from upcountry. They start dealing with whether the rules comply with the court case. I'm not going to take the committee through it page by page, but in summary, they find that the rules do comply generally, but there's three or four issues that they highlight. I think the first issue that's highlighted by the legal opinion is the definitions. What we've done with the rules is we have defined certain concepts. Misconduct, for instance. What is serious? What does a violation mean? The opinion says there's two things that we should do with these definitions. One, specifically with reference to those last three concepts. Instead of saying misconduct means unacceptable, improper, or unprofessional behavior by the president, we should say misconduct includes. So what we're doing by doing that is to go from a closed list to a open list and allows you for unforeseen eventualities. The second thing that the opinion suggests we do with the definitions is instead of defining misconduct, serious, and violation in isolation, rather to define it as it's set out in the Constitution in Section 89, which is, let's define serious violation of the Constitution or the law. Let's define serious misconduct, not separately but together, and the inability to perform the functions of the office. So that's the one suggestion, and then the opinion makes a suggestion in that regard, which we can just take from it or modify. Chairman, my brief is not really to evaluate the opinion, but for what it's worth, from a legal perspective, not from a Jenga's perspective, it makes sense to do it like that. And it makes sense simply because we do not know what can happen and what Section 89 will be used for in the future. But as we all know, it has serious consequences, especially the first two grounds, misconduct or serious violation of the Constitution or the law. The serious consequences that flows from that for the president that gets impeached. So that's the first thing that the opinion is suggesting we do with the rules. The second aspect of the rules that the opinion comments on is the idea of giving a Section 89 motion due preference in the House. And there the opinion has highlighted the rules as they stand at the moment. The scheduling of the report, of the preliminary report, that's rule, draft rule 4, starts 3 at the moment, which says that the scheduling of the report for debate must be given due priority given the program of the assembly. And the same we see in the present draft rule 5.3. Again, the scheduling of the report for debate and decision must be given due priority given the program of the assembly. Now, according to opinion, they're saying that that will go, that's not consistent with the court judgment of the Constitutional Court. We should not make it conditional upon the program of the assembly. In fact, giving it due preference means that it will take precedence over the program of the assembly. So we must just remove those provisions, given the program of the assembly. That's a suggestion that the opinion makes. Chairperson, as far as I know, well, maybe I should have done that second. The third area, which is a little bit, has a little bit more weight, if I can call it that, in terms of consideration by the committee, whether we want it or not, is the idea of the preliminary report, the initiation procedure, section 89. The opinion says, and that's draft rule 1, there's nothing wrong with how we want to initiate it, a member or the through a motion, but in sub rule 1 of rule of draft rule 1, there's one sub rule 1A. It says the motion must be limited to a clearly formulated and substantiated complaint on the grounds specified in section 89. The opinion says that's fine. There we should stop there. That the last area in that rule which says which prima facie warrants an inquiry. The opinion raises questions around that. Why should we have a prima facie test there? Isn't that going to be used to prevent the motion from reaching the preliminary stage, from reaching the House eventually? And it refers to various court cases, namely the Ambrosini case, the Mazibuko case, UDM case, all which sort of points to the fact that it might be a minority party that brings the motion, but the Constitution envisages that that motion will eventually serve before the House. So we don't want to have criteria to prevent it from getting to the House. So it suggests we take away that last part which says a prima facie test to warrant an inquiry. So those are the problems, if I can call it that, that the opinion raised in the draft rules. The rest, Chair, unless I've overlooked something, they say comply. And in general, that is my view as well, Chairperson, and our officer's view, by the way. The issue, of course, of the representation and the panel, there's quite a lot of comments on that. The opinion finds that the idea of having a committee to consider the inquiry made up of proportional representation would not be consistent with the court judgment. So it suggests either we have 50-50, 50 opposition, 50 majority party, which I think one can discuss, and then the chairing by a retired judge or a member of the judiciary, which I'm not 100% sure follows, and I can tell you why I'm not chairperson. So that option of having a proportional representation committee, the opinion highlights as a problem, a constitutional problem. So either we must have a panel or a committee made up of 50%, 50%, but chair, it raises other questions in my mind which the opinion doesn't deal with. If we have a committee that's 50% opposition, 50% ruling party, there will be areas of contestation, because some opposition parties are opposition in name only. Ideologically, they might support the ruling party. And I'm not talking necessarily of the present situation, but I mean, in any situation, there will be coalitions, and someone might say that you are maybe a member of your party in cabinet, or you have voted for or with the ruling party. Why are you now part of the opposition? Because the whole point is to allow a proper ventilation of the issues that's raised in Section 89, and we don't want it to have a political outcome, which is what it is. So that in itself does not solve all the problems that there might be, but certainly on paper, it doesn't look like it can then be a minority party's motion on Section 89 won't be frustrated by a composition of a committee that's made up 50% of the majority party, 50% of the minority parties. But as I say, when one looks at the reality of it, there might be still issues around that. The issue of a retired judge chairing a committee or a panel of retired judges, chairperson, that is something that I think for lack of anything else, we can give it a go. I have my concerns about a chairperson because the whole idea of judges assisting Parliament with its functions has not been tested in South Africa. And we have a code of judicial conduct which is made in terms of the Judicial Service Commission Act, which deals with conduct of judges. And there's some provisions in there that seems to allude to the fact that if one looks at there's an Article 7 there that says judges may only with the written consent of the minister acting after consultation with the Chief Justice hold or perform any other office of profit or receive in respect of any service of fees, emoluments or other remuneration. So first of all, we can't pay a judge if a judge should do that. And it says that in that same Article 17 that all activities of the judge no longer on active service must be compatible with his or her status as a retired judge. And the judge must not accept any appointment that's likely to affect or to be seen to affect the independence of the judiciary or which could undermine the separation of powers or the status of the judiciary and must not receive any income incompatible with the judicial office. So we can get rid of the issue of remuneration. But as I said, Chair, I think the legal opinion, and it makes sense that we went for senior counsel and a very senior counsel, as well as the junior in this case, Bishop Alay, she might as well be senior because she has 15 or 16 years experience in high profile cases. But they did not question that idea at all. From our office, we've discussed it, we've raised certain issues. I've sent an email to the Constitutional Court, to the Chief Justice. I haven't received anything back. I think it must have fallen out of the inbox somewhere. But I was told that it will be brought to the attention of the then, who then, I don't know. But the point where I'm trying to make is that should a judge act as a chairperson of a committee composed of 50% opposition, 50% minority parties, and we give that judge a deliberative vote in the case of a casting vote in the case of a 50-50 split. I mean, isn't that judge jeopardizing their independence? Or not? It's a question I don't have an answer to, but I think we'll put the retired judge in a difficult position. It's one thing to rule on the law. It's quite another thing to vote, I think, in a committee. So, when it comes to the options, I would almost say that if we do use retired judges and we make an objective finding on the basis of the law, given the definitions of Section 89 in terms of the procedure of the rules, it looks like a panel would be a best option to go for, considering the politics. So, Chair, as I say, unless I've overlooked something, I think that is what the opinion gives us. I think in broad strokes, and to conclude, the rules are generally compliant with the court case, except for those three issues that we've highlighted, and then the concern about the panel or the committee, which is options that we're giving the rules committee, which we can deal with them. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Any additional questions? No. Anyone want to pose some questions to the advocate?
Yeah,
Chair, firstly, I must admit that I haven't read this, the opinion, but I'm just trying to follow what the advocate is saying. But I'm a bit confused here about, you know, the judges having to vote in a committee. I mean, whatever the decision of the committee is still taken to the House. I mean, that's where the actual voting on the matter will be considered. It's the House. And then when you talk about majority, I mean, I think you're assuming that a party will have a majority. And that may not necessarily be so. So if you come back with 45% in the sixth parliament, I mean, you can't have 50% of the members on a committee. So I think these are some grey areas here that we really need to address. You know? And, so that's the one. And then the panel of giving Section 89 due preference in the House, I think that's left to the Whippery and the Programming Committee. And in a matter like this, I have no doubt that it will be given priority, you know, if it comes up. So I'm trying to reconcile the opinion with what we need to do as a subcommittee. What do we need to propose? I mean, arising out of the opinion, what proposals should we be making to the Rules Committee on this matter?
Thank you. Advocate, any point that you want to make?
Chair, I just appreciate the support from Honourable Sidney. Because we do not know. We can say in the rule, yes, it's half majority party, half opposition, but it's almost based on our thinking at the present. We don't know what the future holds, and that's why I would prefer option two. If I report back, I mean, one doesn't have to only say option two. One can put option one with reservations, and the rules can be changed if it doesn't fit into a parliament made up of, for instance, no party got 50% clear majority, so why should a party then have 50% of the seats in a committee just because it's a ruling party in that time? So I think also it proves the point that we must look at the rules from the perspective of the future. And fair enough, the reason for the voting, one, I was just thinking, because the committee is operating like a normal committee, so if the draft rule says at the moment, so one will think that you have a quorum requirement, you have to have a report, the report gets adopted by majority vote, and that's where the issue will come in. I might just add while I have the microphone on, Honourable Chair, if you allow me, that the opinion makes a few suggestions also about the powers of the committee. List four or five powers, brings the power to subpoena, the power to appoint an evident leader, etc., which is also quite relevant to look at what they put in the rules. I almost want to say that would be uncontested. I mean, I think it's the understanding of all people in this committee that this panel or committee will have the power to subpoena, will have the power to need evidence, will have the power to appoint someone to need evidence, etc. It's useful for the opinion to point out maybe we should make it explicit and not just say you have the powers of committees. When I read it, I thought my first idea was we have a court decision that says your ad hoc system is not going to work for this. So we must have a specific focused area. So while we're drafting these rules for a specific focus area, the opinion points that we then say yes, but the appointment must happen in terms of the general rules, or the appointment of the powers in terms of the general rules. And I think the opinion is saying, if you have the specialized system and rules for Section 89, put the special powers of this committee or panel there. Put the special appointment procedures for them there. There's also a comment in the beginning of the opinion which deals with the issue of motions. And I think it's NA Rule 154 that applies to motions. And there the opinion also says there's only certain aspects of Rule 154 that's going to apply when it comes to a motion on Section 89. So don't necessarily say that it must accord to the Constitution, law, and or the rules, because this is specific rules, so leave out the rules part. You have to have a motion, it must accord with the Constitution, that's obvious, and with law, that's obvious, but it's specific. It doesn't have to necessarily comply with all the sub-provisions in Rule 154. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Tyler?
I just wanted to let them say, I think it's the rules on motions, I don't know, it's not 154, but...
154 proposition.
Yeah, committees, but okay. My boss can look for it. It's just going to indicate which rule applies to motions. motion. Chapter 7 of the NA rules is with motions.
The 7.
And the third page, 83. It's rule 119 onwards.
Okay.
Can I write to that one provision on the opinion? Can we then check the second item on our agenda? Third item? Can we hear the AMC proposals?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we all know that this matter was sort of very prevalent earlier last year, as well as up to the beginning of this year, and thereafter, we just wanted to make sure that all parties, during the period that we have allowed between the previous subcommittee meeting and the Rules Committee meeting that came together later to reconsider, and come up with specific proposals, taking into account legal opinions that we have received. We have received more than one. We therefore want to say that what became evident was that there was a concern that there should not be any prohibition to investigate a matter based on whoever governs the country's sensitivity to deal with a matter of a transgression of the Constitution. So, when we had deliberations in the subcommittee before, Chairperson, we, as the ANC, were comfortable with a committee that would do the preliminary investigation, although the EFF position was very clear that they wanted a panel of judges, etc. We have heard what the dilemma is with such a panel, etc. So we thought, let us take on board certain steps. We understand that Section 89 needs specific provisions. That does not mean that we cannot take from the rest of the rules, because when you interpret the rules, when you interpret any law, you have to read certain provisions jointly, etc. So we believe that we could improve firstly on the definitions, and therefore we have made proposed changes to the definition, so that we clearly illustrate an important criteria for a panel to assess whether a serious misconduct was in fact to be scrutinized, or a serious violation of the Constitution. Now, we have before us our changes, definitions, and Chair, I don't know that if you want me to specifically go through them. If you ask me to do that, I will. I will come back to a thing. We have the definitions. Secondly, the start of the process. We believe that in this case, it is important for us to refer to Rule 126 of the rules, that you, when you initiate it, it's by way of a motion, as we deal with any motion before the House. And then we are saying the motion must be clearly formulated and a substantiated charge, because we all remember that we cannot just make frivolous comments. It must be properly substantiated. So therefore, we say it must be a substantive charge on the grounds specified in Section 89. And then we list what those grounds are, and that the person initiating such a process must, to make a clear difference between Section 89 motions and 102 motions, which are more of a political nature. You need an ordinary majority in the House to pass them. This is specifically where you have a very serious charge against the President. So obviously, it needs substantiation. Then we say all evidence relied upon in support of the motion must be attached to the motion, and the charge must relate to an action or conduct performed by the president in his person, and it must be consistent with the constitution, the law and these rules, as we say. Then the only mechanism that to speak upon receipt of the motion, whether it is introduced in the House or submitted to the Speaker's office, the only operation that the Speaker will be doing is to say, does it comply with the rules, just the ordinary engaging with a member to make sure that it is compliant with the criteria set out in our rules. And then the next step for the Speaker is to immediately, and I want to stress, to immediately, refer the motion and any supporting documentation provided by the member to. Now here we're coming with a different position, and we have introduced it before in the rules, and there was some sort of concern expressed by some of the members in the Rules Committee, but we've now firmly established that. It would be problematic to have a committee of Parliament doing the initial scrutiny. It must be a panel that is considering it, and we don't agree that it should be a panel consisting of judges only or of retired judges. We say it may include a judge, but it's eminent South Africans that could be appointed. But the important thing is that the Speaker invites parties to submit names to her office. And then if a judge is to be appointed to the panel, the Speaker must do so in consultation with the Chief Justice. And I think it is to avoid a situation where you have a judge that would be, or two judges that would have to assess the initial seriousness of the nature of the complaint contained in the motion. You would like to have a legal person present, obviously, a person with some legal background, so we don't agree that it should be consisting of judges as a panel, but it may include a judge in the panel. And then the chairperson must appoint one of the three panelists as chairperson. Then we list the functions and the powers of the panel, and we're saying it must make recommendations to the Speaker within 30 days when sufficient evidence exists to show that the President has committed a serious violation or serious misconduct or suffers from an inability to perform its duties in terms of the office. And it must afford the President an opportunity to submit evidence to the contrary, whatever, must provide President with a reasonable opportunity to respond in writing, must not hold an oral hearing, and must limit its inquiry to the relevant written and recorded information before it by members in terms of the rule. Now, why this is important is just that this panel must go through to say, this is a frivolous matter. It's really not of a substantive nature, and therefore they then simply make their findings, including the reasons for such findings available, upon which its recommendation is based, and any minority view of any panelist must be contained in the report. That's to make sure that all views are considered. It's contained in a written document to be presented to the Speaker. And then the quorum requirement is that everybody must remain part of the proceedings and remain present. Then once the panel has reported to the Speaker, the Speaker must schedule it for consideration by the Assembly. We regard this as very important because the Constitution makes the National Assembly the body that must take the resolution. the panel's recommendations and the reasons for it must then be submitted to the National Assembly, and the President must be informed of the scheduling of the decision on the report. And once the Assembly has deliberated on the matter, they must then decide whether the next step in the process should kick in. And that is whether there is sufficient grounds for impeachment inquiry. Then, what then happens, Chairperson, is that there is the establishment of the impeachment committee. Now, there are two options of the composition. The one is, and now we must remember this is quite a big committee to engage with the President and the documentation provided, the evidence provided, etc., etc. And so it's either this very big committee, option one, or what we believe is possibly a better option, is a smaller committee, but still inclusive. And that is a number of Assembly members that the Speaker may determine, subject to the provision of Rule 154, provided that all parties in the Assembly must be proportionally represented. The reason for this is that we want to make sure that we take on board the Constitutional Court's recommendation that this must be a fully inclusive process. In the end, it is a committee that must proceed with the rest of the investigation, and they must then again. Now, some of the legal opinion that was provided by Morgan indicates that there is a misunderstanding about the role of committees. Committees have no say. It's only the National Assembly that has a say. So this committee recommends. Whatever this committee recommends to the House must still be passed by the House. And we must bear in mind that the Constitution says, in Section 89, that it is the National Assembly that may decide to proceed to remove the President. It's not compulsory. It says the National Assembly by a resolution adopted with the supporting vote of at least two-thirds of it may remove the President. So the Constitution gives the National Assembly the right, but it doesn't compel it to remove. So bearing all of that in mind, we believe that what you need is an investigative committee or an impeachment committee, whatever you call it. That does not need to be a ZEC. It can be representative broadly. But, you know, for instance, if you look at our current portfolio committees, it's not proportional. It's sort of trying to accommodate as many parties as possible. So look at option two as our preferred option. Then the chairperson of the impeachment committee, it must be appointed by its members. And then the functions and powers, committee must, when the Assembly has approved the recommendation from the panel to proceed for Section 89, proceed to establish the veracity and where required the seriousness of the charges and report to the Assembly thereon. The committee must also ensure that the inquiry is conducted in a reasonable and procedurally fair manner within a reasonable time frame. And then it must afford the President the right to be heard on his own defence and to be assisted by a legal practitioner or other expert to provide as legal advice. And then the committee would have all the powers applicable to parliamentary committees. That would include to subpoena people, provided for the Constitution, applicable law and the rules of the Assembly. And I mean, obviously, the Powers and Privileges Act, for instance, would also come into play. Then a question before the committee has decided when a quorum in terms of 162.2 is present, and there's an agreement among the majority of the members, agreement among the majority of the members, provided that when the committee reports all views, including minority views, expressed in the committee must be included in its report. And this is quite significant because, as we all know, that this provision is usually contained on committees when they report on bills. But because this is quite a serious matter, it is important to have all views expressed in the committee report. Then the consideration of the report, once the committee has concluded in the inquiry, it must report to the Assembly forthwith. Now, whereas we don't want to put pressure on the committee to proceed, obviously you want to conclude this because it's not going to be in the interest of the country that it hangs in there for too long. But the report of the committee must contain findings and recommendations, and including the reasons for such. The report must be scheduled for consideration and based on the Assembly with due urgency. Again, we want to put some pressure that this is not hanging in there, and providing for a situation where there's a lot of uncertainty for too long. If the report recommends that the President be removed from office, the question must be put to the Assembly directly for a vote in terms of the rules, and if the question is supported by at least two-thirds of the 400 members of the Assembly. Now, we must bear in mind that there was also chairperson. We should perhaps consider the situation two-thirds of the incumbent members of the Assembly, because the legal opinion that was provided suggested that you cannot argue it must be a two-thirds of 400 if you have five vacancies, for instance, in the Assembly. And in order to fill those five vacancies could take some time. You know, sometimes parties are changing their lists, etc. So the suggestion is that we consider looking at incumbent members, but two-thirds of the incumbent members of the House, because the Constitution provides that the National Assembly must have between 350 and 400 members. So obviously, it does not make the National Assembly dysfunctional if there are fewer incumbent members. You know, so that is our position. The recommendations are not binding. We decided to include a paragraph here because there was an overall concern that either the independent panel or the impeachment committee could be used as a mechanism to almost prevent the National Assembly from proceeding with its work, to consider, you know, to undue delay. We remember the Mazibuko case where the motion of no confidence was not immediately placed on the order paper, etc. So we understand that there were some sensitivities by the Constitutional Court on those matters, and therefore we feel that in any case, the independent panel will present its views and its recommendations. If it is to be taken any further, the impeachment committee will proceed, etc., and will take resolution. But ultimately, it must remain the National Assembly that decides whether they want to remove the President on the ground. And then we also felt it was important because it affects the benefits of the President if he or she is removed. Only if the President is removed on account of inability does he or she retain the benefits. In this case, we are stipulating specifically that if the President is removed from office, the benefits of the President must strictly be dealt with in terms of the relevant provisions of the Constitution. Because Section 89 is very clear and differentiates between when the President is removed on account of misconduct, serious misconduct, or so core on the grounds of inability. Chairperson, this is our view. We have adjusted. We've based our recommendations that we contain and that we submit to the subcommittee on what we have read through the different legal opinions, as well as, again, considering the court's concerns about a majority party, whoever it may be, that may try to block an investigation in terms of Section 89, and we present it. If we're looking at the definitions, we have taken on board recommendations also made by legal counsel Mark. So those we present to the subcommittee. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much for the presentation. Any addition? Okay, any addition? Okay. Colleagues, let us then open for discussion. Let us find out what, how do you see the non-opposition.
Yeah, Jefferson, thank you very much. And thank you for the answer. I'm just trying to locate the document that you're speaking to. I see there's some writing in red and things like that. Or is it this one?
Yeah.
Oh. He's from Dr. Job, this one which states draft rule for the former president.
That's
it. Yeah. I think, Chair, from my side, yes, I think, yeah, it's been difficult for me to either agree or disagree with what is there. We'll need some time to digest it. But I think the principle of panel to do the prima facie investigation is something we agree to, you know. So that before it's brought to a committee of parliament or members of parliament, there should be this prima facie evidence. When you get charged in court for whatever matter, you open a charge at the police station, the prosecuting authority will first say, yes, we decline to prosecute or whatever, based on legal facts. So, and I think we need those kind of facts before we proceed. Otherwise, we may be just shooting in the dark. Tomorrow I can say, let's impeach the president for whatever reason. And it may not be a valid legal reason that, you know, that I'm putting forth. So we agree with the panel. I think the challenge we have is, I can say as opposition, is that from experience, we know that the previous president has flouted our constitution. There's been findings, there's been rulings by different sources of that haven't been done. But the majority party uses its majority to cover up that kind of misconduct or negligence or breach of responsibility. And I think that is a fear that we have as we sit. That, you know, if you just allow it being a majority-minority thing, you're going to end up with the same thing, except that, of course, reason prevailed afterwards and you had your recent conference which changed things around a bit. We had that position in Parliament when the president was changed. But I think that's the general fear. Now, Brazil has had its president impeached. U.S. had it once, I think. What examples are we taking from there in terms of how they do it? Have we gone into that? And I must admit that I haven't been attending these meetings. I've had other members because of other commitments. But are we using other countries, you know, that have impeached them? And recently it was Brazil, I think, that impeached. I mean, how did they go about it? I don't think it was such a long, quote-unquote, laborious process like ours. Maybe we are being over-careful. Because when it comes to taking the decision of impeaching, I would like to think that the country and all political parties have a similar view, because the matter has gone to such an extent that you really, really now feel, you know, enough is enough. So, do we have those kinds of examples? What do they do? How do they include this in their rules? But the proportionality, I think I agree with the opinion and the court that we can't work on proportion here. There's got to be some kind of fairness because it affects the country as a whole at the end of the day. So, you know, majority in this question inquiry, full stop. We just say, no, and you can do what you like, stand on your head. So, how do we have those checks and balances that takes everybody into account at the end of the day? So I think those are my just general comments to it. Maybe we need to just rethink it a bit. Thanks.
Yeah. Why don't we have more? Okay. Now, let us look at it and see what we can do and what we can recommend. But it seems, in terms of definition, the general stuff.
Yeah. Definition, no problem.
Just to ensure that when we go to the Rules Committee on the 28th, at least some of the issues that we have agreed to resolve. And then you can then, it seems also there's no issue about initiation of deception within an inquiry, generally. Because if the state had there, that is 1-1, A, B, and C, is constitutional issues. Can't change them. D, can't change them. 2 is an issue. There's compliance. There's no issue on that for compliance, generally. We must comply. There's no issue on the issue of referral. I heard Honorable Singh saying that the panel also for prima facie evidence is not a big issue. It's not a big panel. The panel of papers is one of the major charge, provided that we are free to do that or not. It's our duty really just to say, is there any case for it? And then prima facie evidence. Once there's prima facie evidence, I suspect that would be very difficult. Even for the most powerful government party to avoid that if the prima facie evidence of innocent person who are very competent says that evidence here that this is a violation of the Constitution. Because of course this is probably the high today is a separate issue. But in terms of violation of the Constitution, you see that this conduct. It seems that it would be difficult for any party, I guess, to resist that temptation. Even if it's proportional, I'm not sure how can they avoid that when they set up an independent, very competent South African say, man, there's something wrong here, there's a violation in this case, there's misconduct, serious one. Well, maybe it can happen under the sun, but I don't think anyone can stand the threat of time on that. It seems an issue that we must agree, because we agree the question of independence, that we need a panel. That takes care of issues that were raised. It's just the DA is not here today, I think they had another view on this matter. But generally, many parties, I think the AFF anyway, was also supporting this idea of a panel, I think also Mr. Singh and other colleagues, they were saying, you know, that's the best way to go. And don't involve members of parliament at the initial stages, allow people who are competent and then South African to look at this. One of them may be a judge, the size may be 5, maybe 3, generally it's not an issue. An issue is that a panel that we have. It seems that one, there's no bigger issue for members who are here to prepare for the composition also, there's no bigger issue. And then, of course, you need one person to work on it. And the functions and powers of that team, they're elaborated here. And then on page 3, I think 2 of the document, that is making proposal. Again, reinstating then what is there in the Constitution through speaking. And then A and B. The panel then said that is working arrangement, is their decision, how they're going to work, how many times they meet. Those are issues that are procedural matter. The quorum again, the panel may proceed in business when 3 panelists are present, the human present. That's really an issue to ensure that people are there. Consideration, that is 6 systems, also consideration of the panel report, a procedural matter, just a procedural matter. And then the issues around the impeachment committee, if you want to call it impeachment committee, or the removal of the president, because whatever you call it, we understand what are the issues there. That's an issue that is there. There are 2 options. And then I think we have to see what we can do. First option, everyone is right, but it's proportional. And option 2, the issue is number 2 proportional.
I don't have a problem with option 2 because 31 is just too cumbersome, just way out. And then that also gives one party the majority there as well in the current situation. So I think we must see what situation prevails at the time that this happens so that the speaker, in consultation with everybody, can, put the committee together.
Of course, the rules do allow any member to attend any committee. So even if you're a member of one party, one person party, you can still go to the committee, make your views heard, you know, put questions to witnesses. You will be able to vote in the House.
Our suggestion is also based on understanding that this is not going to be like daily use of this particular approach. And secondly, the situation is not going to be stagnant when you're going to be solely the ANC remaining as the majority party. Anything can happen during the election. And the rule, as the chairperson always says, don't have it subjectively. Take it that if you're not there, the rule is going to be there to be able to fulfill a particular mission. And if the forces in parliament, the different parties change, the issue, the situation might be totally different. And that's why I'm quite ready as the African National Congress to listen to different ideas. But we not influenced by stagnation. The more saying that let's continue, a rule has to be put into place so that that rule could be able to come in at the right place, right time, when it's needed. But now we're jumping down, and that's why the chairperson has always been emphasizing, don't be subjective about your present conditions. Look at it. It might not be used this year, it might not be used next year. There might be election, the forces might change. What do you do? But the rule always is to be there.
And I will see.
Chair, I'm sorry, I'll have to leave in about 5 minutes or so. My people are there. I heard that the contented say early on that from the opinion and even the comfort, they were not happy about this proportional representation on a committee. Am I correct? Just before I go to
Chair, the way I understand that judgment when it comes to proportionality is that it was said within the context of using the ad hoc committee system. But the legal opinion takes it, sort of explains it a little bit further. So generally that will be subject to a constitutional challenge.
They're quite careful how they phrase it, Chair. First they say it will be subject, and then there's a risk that it will be subject to a constitutional challenge, the proportionality issue. But one can discuss it further and further, but in the end it's going to serve before the House, which is the House.
Yeah.
And so one wants to say, if the reason, that's what I said I think way back when we briefed this committee on the court case, it's almost as the court has said, well not almost, that's my understanding of the court cases. We do not like the ad hoc system because it has proportional representation and therefore it can prevent the motion from serving before the House if the committee rejects it. So for me, if we can get around that, to say that even if it's rejected, that must serve before the House. Much like a private member's bill, even if there's a motion of non-desirability on a private member's bill, that bill must serve, still be reported by the committee and you must debate it in the House where the court said that is what we want to see. That is a forum in the public eye, which is of the constitution envisages. That's my understanding of it, but the opinion says there's a constitutional problem with proportional representation. And I've just also expressed my view on it.
Yeah, Chair, the reason I ask that, see, I'll be more comfortable with what you're saying in the end. Whether it's supported by a committee or not, take it to the House is the final arbiter. But you see, your proposal that you presented now on option two says the committee consists of the number of assembly members that the speaker may determine, subject to the provisions of Rule 154, provided that all parties in the assembly must be proportionally represented. Now, see, you've got the word proportionally there. My view would be every party should be represented. We've got the same thing with the CRC at the moment, where I put in a request on behalf of the smaller parties that every party should have a representative on that committee. What happens to the debate in the House is something else. Because it's of such a serious nature, this land expropriation. Similarly here, this is of such serious nature that every member of every party should have representation. Whether it's proportional or not, I think we mustn't put this here. Let the Speaker determine that at that stage. Otherwise, we'll be defeating what the court has said and the opinion and that kind of. But take it to the House.
Okay. Okay, then let us work it out and find out what we can trade for the Rules Committee option. It seems option one general is too big and worldly, not necessary. We may go for option two, but allow some of the issues that is raised about every party represented. Because the committee anyway doesn't take a final decision on behalf. All committees generally make recommendations,
yeah.
And then only the House that will take the decision. Even if this one member per committee is immaterial,
yeah.
Because the proportionality will apply in the chamber when matters are raised in the chamber, when we debate issues, whether we approve the motion or not approve the motion.
And you need to dance.
And then that's really very difficult. To get majority on this one, very difficult. But also, I think it's something that may not happen in our lifetime anyway. Because I don't think any president will misbehave in such a way that might be.
Only if Nyami Boy is
not the president. Nyami Boy will never also misbehave in such a way that
the president will
misbehave. In just in case, because we have to draft this rule, and that's what we are doing. We may not even see it anyway in our lifetime. We can then proceed and see what we can do. I'm not sure what is the position of other parties because I'm not here.
Yeah.
Generally, I think they will accept this one because there's a precedent already in terms of the Constitutional Review Committee. We all agree on the equal representation there. I hope that I'm going to formulate their report very soon and be debated in the chamber. In the chamber, then we'll decide whether they accept the report or not accept the report.
Yes, I mean, I think just in summary, I think just basically the two issues which, you know, other parties may want to focus on. The one is the issue of the panel and how that works.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is the composition of the impeachment group. But I think, as members have said, you know, it's very important to remember that no committee in Parliament takes positions.
No.
Mainly there are one or two,
yeah,
cases in the Security Committee and stuff, but that's very, very exceptional. So, you know, committees make recommendations, decisions are taken by the House.
Well, I just think that many parties would accept the panel approach. DA was having some problem about that, but I think we'll be persuaded that putting an optimism today. And then in terms of the composition, I think two would be a preferred option. General. I think members who are here, two is a preferred option. We have to discuss whether it's equal representation or proportional representation or not. But it seems the way we are putting it, that anyway, even if the ANC can take the entire membership of the ANC to that committee, they still go to the House.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, because we can't kill it anyway, it's only the House that can kill that recommendation. First, it's safeguarded by the panel, and then it should be part of really undermining the decision of the panel. And then also the House is there for proportional voting. General, I don't think we should really fight over this issue,
yeah,
of the composition. Where there's equal representation is immaterial. You can't kill a report. The report must come to the chamber or to the assembly. The assembly should kill them through the vote and other issue on that. Okay? Advocate Jenkins, what is your view? It's dangerous when advocates are quiet.
I just remember that. I mean, there was very strong views in this committee from various political parties on this point. Inflexible views, almost, if I remember it correctly. I think my view, I'm just going to repeat myself, that when we're dealing with the committee to consider the preliminary report, that's what we're dealing with, or a panel, or not the panel is the preliminary report, but the committee there, I would suggest, or I would, for what it's worth, I think it's a valid suggestion from Honourable Singh to say, let's take out the word proportional and let's give freedom to decide how. And if we can deal with the procedures of that committee so that whatever is in that report is basically, well, there must be some recommendation, I suppose, but to put it before the House more than minutes than just a recommendation of the committee. So you get all the views expressed. And I also think that the idea of that every party has a right to be represented on it would, I mean, of course a party can choose to or elect to exercise that or not, would also work. So one will get a very wide spectrum of views before the House, and then the House will take a final decision. I cannot see how that is inconsistent with the second year judgment of the Constitutional Court. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. One of the things before you leave, then in the Rules Committee, generally would make these options, there will be three options. Option one, the speech stated that, but only the Rules Committee can say, no, this one doesn't apply. And then you say that this is an issue that we are putting forward. Of course, there's no support generally for it. We put two as it stands now. And then with proportional representation, we also put option three, that without proportional representation. And then we choose on that. But I think we prefer the number, option three, generally speaking, because it doesn't cause harm to anyone. And then you think that's how we're going to do it. We put the three options. But we indicate in the Rules Committee which option we prefer. Then the Rules Committee may take a decision that, you know, you guys didn't apply your mind, and we prefer option one, the bigger one. It's well again, as long as I think the issue of proportionality also should be really to look at it. And then I think we can do all that. I think on the panel issue, I think we'll agree that we should go for that vote. And then the Speaker will do that. All of us parties will be consulted. It's got composed. And then very eminent person, very knowledgeable one, deal with this matter, come to the Speaker, take it to the Chamber. The Chamber decides to impeach, set up a committee there. All parties, maybe there will be 120 parties for 2019.
The independent are allowed to.
Huge parties, and then that's an issue that we are going to put forward. Let us just finalize the functions of the committee, any issue there? Albert Jenkins, any issue that is really problematic, the functions of the committee. I think we also raised some of the issues there.
Well, the legal opinion has suggested that we set out just very clearly and succinctly the functions of the committee. I think it's on page 42 of the opinion, to summon by way of subpoena any person to receive representations, permit oral evidence, determine its own working arrangements, and appoint a legal practitioner, but that is there in any event in the rules.
Yeah.
So I think it's covered. So I don't have really anything to add to that. I think it is covered the way it is at the moment, and I think should there be a gap in there, I mean, the House, if I understand this correctly, we get to the panel is going to make a report, a recommendation, is going to go to the House, and the House will refer it to this committee.
Yeah.
And with that referral, the House can add further functions to say that you may appoint or may not appoint an evidence.
Yeah.
You may do this. That can happen. That's not a problem if there is a gap. But I think the rules as it stands, the functions of committees cover what is in the legal opinion.
The decision, I think, is covered. How positions are taken in the chamber. Consideration of the report, no issue there.
No.
General issue recommendations, just a clarity again, recommendations are not binding to the chamber until the chamber has taken a decision. And because there has been a view that committees, they can work and take decisions, where in fact they make recommendations. Eight of that point is just really indicating what will happen then if the chambers do act. Yes.
Chair, just on the method of voting, there's been an impeachment. Is it going to be normal voting, pressing of buttons, or secret vote, secret ballot?
Yes.
My understanding is that the court judgment on the secret ballot issue, which is related to motions of no confidence, but what it kind of said was that the Speaker can determine in the circumstances whether there should be a secret ballot. And I think that's what the essence of that judgment. I'm not sure if that applies to this process. I'm sure maybe
Andrew can look at that.
Yeah.
whether we should apply our mind on this one. Advocate also assisted there. I think the point that you raised is how the president in Brazil should move. I'm not sure the secret pilot are not well for what will happen in America and future after November or after December, who knows? Just that these are issues that we must consider.
Yeah.
And then if we consider them, we should be able to say that. I think the serious motion anyway, the constitutional motion, we have to think the method of voting, we must apply our mind, the Rules Committee will see what they want to do. They may decide, civil pilot, they may decide after vote, by show of hands. I'm not sure what will be the situation. But it happened once in our lifetime, it will never happen. Maybe we are stressed for something that will never happen.
Advocate, you seem to have applied your mind on it. Yeah, I recall that that court case and the judgment that came out, how it read the present rules as it is at the moment, was that the speaker has the discretion to allow secret or an open vote, if I can call it that, on any matter. I mean, it focused on motions of no confidence, but it used the present general rules. So, that being the case, the same will apply in this instance. But the draft that we're looking at, I think Honourable Fillion did make the point of the incumbent menu. So, I just have to add that while I have the microphone on. Sorry for that, Chair. It's 2/3 of the members that can cast the vote,
yes.
The incumbent members. So
yes.
That's what the Constitution envisages. A member must cast the vote. So, the NPC cannot cast the vote. The quorum is determined by looking at all the seats. But when we're voting to determine whether there's 2/3 that cast a vote, we will have to count those members that are able to cast a vote. So if someone is absent because they went to watch rugby or that a sick family emergency or anything, that vote can still be cast and will be counted to determine the 2/3.
Yes.
So it's only the vacancies that will be taken away. But it's all those members that can cast. So that's how we determine. So we must look at the proposal in the document we're looking at. But the secret, I think, Chair, the secret vote issue, unless we want to say this must always be secret or we want to specify that the speaker has the discretion to make it a secret vote or an open vote, if we leave it like it is and not say anything, the speaker has the discretion. That's the situation as it is at the moment.
Supply our mind.
Okay.
We would say secret.
We should apply our minds on that one, because we must remember, if Honourable Boy is correct, we're moving in the direction of different possible futures with coalition governments, etc. And it could pose, depending on the nature, because my understanding was that that matter was discussed when the Constitution was drafted, and it was felt that depending on the period within which specific matters are sort of uppermost in the political arena, that would be decided by the Speaker to not make a concrete provision in the Constitution or in fact in our law, the rules. So I think we should consider that. Then just briefly, Chairperson, I think it's good that Honourable Singh has just showed us. In fact, I have a suspicion that that was maybe an oversight on option two, because the idea was that we don't want to be sort of proposing a composition that would in fact be contrary to what the Constitutional Court was feeling, that it was possibly a difficulty. And then lastly, I just wanted to say, Honourable Singh said that, the composition of, the panel proceeding and presenting a report that there should be impeachment process and then the majority party or majority coalition would then try and prevent it, it would be extremely difficult in the current circumstances in South Africa, with everything so transparent.
Experience is the best teacher.
yes, but exactly for that purpose.
We know.
We must remember that you know, it's, everything is going to be under public scrutiny, Chairperson. So we are not concerned about the composition of the committee, because we know that in the end, you still have a proportional composed National Assembly. Yeah, with some independence in the future, that would be very interesting, but be that as it may, we cannot see that there is any intention to block procedure. And therefore, we've gone through very interesting learning curves during the past 5-6 years. The courts have also assisted us to determine, you know, clear thinking patterns about our processes. Lastly, Chair, just to say that the Brazil president, the process was also not as sudden. It officially started on the 2nd of December 2015, and removal only 5 months later, 5-6 months. So it is a process that would, of necessity, have to take some time to scrutinize the allegations and to come up with evidence. So we have no intention, you know, to make this any sort of drawn-out process. Thank you.
We are not writing a rule for the current member of parliament. The term is ending in 6 months' time. We are drafting a rule for future generation of members of parliament. The compositional change, I think, was when we wrote this one, even the options were looking at the current situation at the time. No one knows whether these parties that are cited here will be back in 2019. Even 2022 or 2025, 7, 8. Therefore, it's far better to be open, the speaker deciding to put this thing, because things will change, the composition will change. But at the time why we put this recommendation of ANC, 17, whatever, we're looking at the current situation. And there's no issue now. The speaker thinks that's the preferred route that we take. It seems then we agree that we take this document as our recommendation to the Rules Committee meeting on the 28th. And if there are new changes there, definitions, we are clear, initiation area will recommend. If we have been proved allowed, we will do that. And the composition of the panel, I think we don't have a problem on that. We don't have a problem of the issues and how they work, functions and parties. And then don't have a problem on the quorum. We accept that. Impeachment committee seems we agree that the option number one is the stance detected to by the current composition of parties in parliament. And then, but it seems you take option number three. That would be similar to option number two, but just removing proportional representation. And then that's what we are going to be proposing. But we put all the options for the rules committee to look at them. And we then move to functions of the committee since we agree that we don't have to change in terms of the issues. Of course, the chamber, if they pass the resolution, and they take down some of those issues. At the end, I think we're just talking about method of voting, those issues that have to be re-looked at. I think the rules committee have to re-look at it, whether it's applicable or not. The speaker anyway has to question it also. I think we are going to do that. The report is going to be finalized as a report of our sub-team, sub-committee. If possible, circulate it to other members. And that's when some members are supposed to be here and they have. When you go to the rules committee, it doesn't become again a long-term report. We've been dealing with this matter for some time. And then I think many parties will agree on this. And then when they come, they'll be prepared. And then we move on that issue. I think that's what we're going to do. Okay, I think. Thank you very much. You are invited for tea, that's it.
Thank you.